The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartog. Joining us this week is a guy we talk to quite often now, New York State Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay. Leader Barclay, good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me on. Always good talking with you.
You think the media is fair to Republicans in the state?
I think it's a challenge not only in the state, but throughout the country. I think the mainstream, I guess you'd call it, media has had a leftist bent to it. But that being said, I think there is an effort to show both sides from time to time. I think sometimes what they cover shows a bias, but not necessarily, they're willing to show both sides. So I appreciate that. And listen, we have to deal with the circumstance we're in. So, and the other thing is there's so many more outlets now in the media that it's not as big of an issue maybe as it was in the past. I mean, you can get news from a variety of sources where in the past, when I was growing up, there was three stations on television. That's the only stuff you could watch. And you read the newspaper, that was it.
Yeah. I remember being on two of them. Anyway, let's let's talk a little bit about Election Day. You know, out of all of the bad news that Republicans have had to shoulder over the years in Democratic state with a Democratic governor, Democratic assembly, Democratic Senate, all of a sudden you have an election and the Republicans did quite well. Big wins, including Long Island and then bail reform was a big issue upstate, and reports that wealthy Republican donors gave to Democratic Mayor Byron Brown for his write-in campaign, where he beat self-described socialist India Walton, who beat him in the primary, but he came back and won. What do you make of that whole thing?
Well, I think generally, and we've talked about this on this show numerous times, you have one-party rule that's gone very hard to the left. And I think generally, particularly in a state like New York, people aren't looking for that extreme. They're looking for more moderation. And I think that played out in the election, whether it was in New York State or throughout the country. You saw, the governor of New Jersey almost lose. You saw the Senate majority leader in New Jersey lost. And you saw the Republicans capture the governorship in Virginia, where Biden won by a substantial margin. So something's going on there. And I really do think it's one party rule. It's hard when you're one party running it. You can't blame it on the other side. And I think some of the policies that have been put forth by Democrats have been extreme. And I think people are looking for more balance. And when it seems like things are out of balance, they, they'll vote the other way, particularly independents. And that's what has seemed to happen in this election.
Well, Barclay, let me ask you this. Is Trump getting to be less of an issue in a place like New York?
Seems that way. I don't know how much of a role he played in this past election. Obviously, he was unpopular in New York, so it was difficult, not in all of New York, but in suburbs where Republicans haven't done particularly well, he was particularly unpopular. And it was tough for Republicans in those areas because obviously the other side would try to tie any of our candidates to Trump during that. But now that he's not in office, it's not as big of an issue.
Do you think he's going to come on, Will? You and I have talked many times, and I can always count on you for, incisive, direct, non-BS language. Do you think he's going to run again?
I don't think he'll run. This is total. I have no insights on this, my own feeling. But I think he does want to be relevant. So, I don't think he'll run, but he'll try to keep his hand in it and influence elections where he thinks it would benefit what he sees for the outlook of the country. So, but I would be surprised if he runs. I mean, not that he couldn't, but, he's been through it once. It takes not a small undertaking. I just would wonder if he wanted to go through that all again, but maybe. But if I had to put money on one way or the other, I bet he does not run it this time.
Are you personally scared of the guy?
Donald Trump?
Yeah.
No, not at all. I mean, I don't know what he could do to affect me. I don't, what do you mean by scared? Like politically, if somehow?
Yeah. Will we know?
Let me say this. I'd never really loved his personality, but he did a great job. I thought, you know, some of the policy stuff that he was able to accomplish in his 4 years presidency, I thought was good.
Like
and
what?
Some of the stuff you notice now. Well, just look at foreign affairs, for one, compared to what happened in this administration. You know, he kept us in pretty good stay over 4 years where people were predicting there was going to be Armageddon in foreign policy. And then the economy was doing great under Trump.
I don't see that. I mean,
yeah,
I think
the big things.
I think the French hated us as a result of, you know.
Hated us is one thing, but another thing is, you know, were they actively engaged against us? I don't know if that's the case. And I don't know if the French love it. And there, again, I'm getting a little far afield here, but wasn't there an issue with the current president and the French? And I think they recalled their ambassador at one point under Biden. So I don't know if that's improved or not and how much of an impact that has. But I don't know. So there certainly was a lot to criticize the guy personally, but from a political standpoint, you know, as a Republican, I didn't think he was bad.
So let's go to this Buffalo situation. Have Republicans demonized socialism? You know, there was a primary, a socialist Democrat gets elected and then gets basically ousted. When people scratch their heads and say, what did we do? Were you guys involved in that at all?
We weren't. I wasn't directly involved in that. I don't have a role in municipal races, but I was happy to see that outcome. You know, again, I think when people learn about the extremism of the Democrat socialists, they have second thoughts, even in a place that's heavily Democratic, which the city of Buffalo certainly is. But when they're talking about, you know, some of the policies they want to do, the main one you hear the most about is defunding the police. I think that gives people pause and second thoughts. And even if you're a Democrat, you maybe don't want to go that far afield, that extreme. So I wasn't, you know, I think primaries can be very tricky things. There's usually very low voter turnout. I think in this case, there was some, they took things for granted. The mayor at the time thought he would sail through the primary. And that didn't happen. But once the realization of what the alternative was came to light, I think the Democratic Party and the mayor got to work. And certainly the Republicans, whatever extent, there wasn't a Republican candidate in it. We're supportive of Byron Brown, too, because the alternative was much more extreme and worse in their opinion, I think.
You know, I always sort of scratch my head and think about leadership roles like yours when you see, for example, a congressman or an office holder, a Republican, not doing the right thing. Is it your job to call them up and say, hey, get off your behind and, you know, get out there and campaign because you'll lose like so many other people who are in power? Do you ever have to do that?
Definitely try to do it. The hard part, again, is this is not, you know, black and white sometimes. And it's I think, difficult to get people to do what we think or I think they ought to do. They may have a different opinion or they just won't listen. So, but certainly, I think having been involved in this a long time, I have some idea of how to be successful, particularly winning races in a difficult state. But, you know, listen, you can't always, and people have different opinions, and I'm not always right on that, but I certainly would, I don't shy away with sharing my opinion and expressing what I think people ought to do in order to be successful.
Do you ever channel your father, who was such an important person in New York State in our politics? Do you ever say, what would Dad have done?
Well, I do miss him every day. I will say that. And he obviously had a big, thank you for that question, but he had a big impact on me. And, you know, I try to live up to what he did in his career and the type of person he was. And every day I try to live up to that, but, you know, it's not easy.
Hey, Will Barclay.
He's a great example for me, though.
New York State is about to close 6 state prisons, and you've made a statement that 6 correctional facilities will be closed is more evidence that Governor Hochul is campaigning rather than governing. Closing prisons is an idea that might appeal to liberal voters in a primary, but it's of no benefit to upstate communities and represents yet another step backward on public safety, and that comes from you. So tell us what you think Hochul is doing that's political in this case.
Well, I think it's all part of the so-called criminal justice reform, where the extremes out of the city have pushed back on any kind of incarceration or any kind of real accountability when it comes to committing crimes. With the bail reform, as you know, we're putting some serious criminals back on the street. We had raise the age. We now have parole to some extent trimmed back. And closing prisons, I think, fits right into that mentality. Now, you know, we have a system in New York State to close prisons. Certainly, if we have a prison population, we don't want to just keep, you know, that's decreasing and just keep prisons open for no reason. But here, just to announce they're closing six prisons when we have increased prisoner violence against correction officers, we have double bunking, which is illegal in New York State. It seems, and we just spent, for instance, on one of those prisons, just put $10 million in it to renovate the prison and make it into a drug and alcohol treatment facility. Why in God's name are we closing that? So it seems like this was just I think it's political. I think it's an opening negotiation where she went very far and reached and said, we're going to shut six, thinking that maybe there'll be a back and forth and she'll end up closing two. I don't know.
You're talking about Governor Hochul.
We should be up front. Yeah, exactly. And there is a process, and they're short-circuiting. I think they have to give a year notice before they close, and they're trying to short-circuit that type of notice, which I think is problematic, too. This has real impacts, obviously. Impacts on the people in the prisons, no doubt, whether it's safety. You know, as I said, the violence against prison correctional officers is much higher, but also on the communities. And I think that should be taken into account. So just closing these, just because you think it's beneficial to the political, it does have an impact on those local communities. That concerns me also.
Yeah, but is it worth supporting the industry? I guess, Will, as the question I'm asking, is it worth supporting not closing prisons because it supplies jobs as opposed to whether or not it fits into the paradigm of judicial behavior?
Well, I think what you're getting at, if there are prisons, industrial complex, they say, and the only reason we have prisons is try to, prop up maybe struggling economic areas or whatever. I don't agree that that's the case. Obviously, as I said, if there's a declining prison population just because of demographics or whatever, obviously we should be open to closing prisons. But if we're doing it for political reasons, if we're doing it because we're taking we're letting people back out on the street and we're not incarcerating people just for because that's someone's ideological belief or political position, I think that's more dangerous. And I don't think we can just discount, for instance, just to say in 2 months or 3 months we're going to shut a prison. Why not take a year and let a community be able to, if that's what the situation is, to be able to try to get alternatives? You know, why? What's the reason to having to do it so quickly?
In fact, I heard somebody will talk about Sing Sing. They said, why don't you close Sing Sing? That's worth a lot of money down there. Why are you closing these upstate prisons?
Yeah.
Well, the answer to that one, I think, is, maybe I've got something wrong here, is that those prisoners have families, and mostly they come from New York City. So the closer you have for visiting days and things, the better off you are. Have I got that wrong?
I don't know. I haven't heard, and I'm not an expert on the prison system and what, you know, Pacific prisons are able to provide, you know, towards the criminal justice system versus others. So there may be other reasons, but that may be very well be a reason. But again, it's a complicated circumstance. And just to say, we're going to, a few months, we're going to close six prisons. I would like to hear more about it, understand where they're going. And that's why we have in law that in order to close a prison, I think you got to give a year's notice. Like, why are we short circuiting that?
The Supreme Court of the United States seems ready to strike down a restrictive New York gun permitting law, but the justices also seem worried that a broad ruling could threaten gun restrictions on subways, bars, stadiums, and other gathering places. It's a dispute over whether New York's law violating the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms is in effect. Chief Justice John Roberts and other conservative members of the court suggested New York's law goes too far, the so-called concealed carry.
I happen to think it does. We have very restricted gun control rules in New York State. I do think there's a right to bear arms. It's under the Constitution. And the laws in New York, some of them, you could say, infringe upon that. So I'm a big believer in the Second Amendment.
Wait. You mean to say...
I look forward to seeing what the...
Mean to say that we ought to be carrying guns on the subway more?
Well, I don't know if that's specifically what they're trying to curtail in this lawsuit. I thought the issue was there wasn't a standard policy in New York where you had it willy-nilly, where some municipalities were ever deciding you couldn't carry guns, others were, where there wasn't a straight-line rule exactly, you know, what the rule is. But let's, you know... Let's talk about the issue that we have with violent crime and guns in New York State. It's not the law-abiding citizens that are committing the crime. Certainly, if someone's a criminal and they're using a gun, they ought to be prosecuted and punished for that. But why are we continuing to put restrictions on law-abiding citizens for their constitutional right?
Well, wait. You know, the idea that you would carry a gun on the subway and show it and then expect that the bad guys would have guns, and so now we need to give the good guys guns so they can shoot back. Is that what you're saying?
No, but I do think there's a right to self-defense. But, you know, whether this case revolves around someone can carry a gun on the subway or not, but why are we curtailing in New York with some... over the last year, they've seen multiple bills come up. And it's ultimately to try to take away someone's right, the ability to own and in some cases carry a firearm. What is the issue? And what is that going to solve our violent crime problem by putting more restrictions on people that have a legal right and they aren't criminals to carry weapons? I haven't seen that. And you haven't seen that happening in other states that have, you know, more less restrictive gun control. I'm under the thinking that gun control isn't what solves our problem in this violent crime. I mean, that's what we're trying to get at, and that's a worry in New York State. Putting more restrictions on legal owners just isn't helpful. And look at the SAFE Act. You know, the big thing about the SAFE Act is going to make New York the most safe state, the name of itself in the legislation. This is going to make us safer. Well, I haven't seen that result from that. In fact, we see crime, unfortunately, skyrocketed over the last few years. So I'm not sure these policies ultimately have what they claim to be trying to solve.
Let me ask you this. Do you think a Republican, Lee Zeldin or Rob Astorino, can beat any of the candidates who are running for governor?
I really do. And we've talked about this. I do think in my career, I think this is our best opportunity that we've had, at least in decades, to win the governorship. And it's for reasons I expressed. I think there's some extremism going on the other side of the aisle. I witness it, particularly in the assembly, where we have six members of the Democratic Socialist Party, you know, they're not even Democrats, they're socialists, declared socialists, trying to push an agenda. And that agenda is not what New Yorkers want. I think it's an extreme agenda. And New Yorkers want balance. And I think when they see, again, when they see things out of whack, they're going to vote for the other side to try to bring balance back into our government and policies.
So who's ahead, Zeldin or Astorino?
Well, I'm backing Zeldin, although I like Astorino. I certainly strongly support him last time he ran. I think Zeldin has the upper hand in this. He's been able to raise money coming from Long Island. He's obviously a sitting congressman, so that gives him a little bit more ability to with name recognition. So I would think Zeldin is, I think, and also he's got the party support. So I think
he certainly
he's
does
in
that.
Good shape, and I think he'll be our candidate.
How about Andrew? How about Andrew Cuomo?
Yep, go ahead.
How do you think he'll come in? I mean, that's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, You got, let's say you have seven candidates running. And in comes Cuomo at the last minute and says, I'm running. He could just win this thing, couldn't he?
Well, I don't know if he could win, but he certainly would make it interesting with the money he's got. He could certainly play a big role in it. I think people are now more in tune of how he governed, and I think it would be difficult for him to win. But he certainly could. He could play a spoiler. I don't have any doubt on that. I would be surprised. I mean, although some things have floated, I now heard, I mean, the idea that he could run for AG would potentially be currently prosecuted. We'll see what happens. I just think, you know, it's kind of laughable. But I think they make interesting stories, and, you know, I like to think about different hypotheticals, too. But ultimately, I think he's not going to run.
I'd be surprised
if he did.
And how about Hochul? How's she doing?
Well, I've been a little disappointed with her. You know, I think I told you when she first came in, I said I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. She is an upstater, so I have some affinity for that. But I think, again, she's making some political moves, which doesn't always show leadership to me. I think she's making some political moves in order to appease the left side of her party. And obviously she's going to face a tough primary against Tish James, and now Jumaane Williams is going to be in the race. So I see this all drifting to the left.
The biggest issue in the last election that seems to have caught an awful lot of people's attention is bail reform. You know, the idea that the Supreme Court of the United States or others are saying, hey, you know, bail is there for a reason. It means you're supposed to show up again. That's all it means. But where the rich can afford everything and the poor who are out on bail can't. What do you make of that?
Well, there probably was some openness to do bail reform. But like we do, unfortunately, in New York, we take everything and do it to the extreme. So, you know, I don't think myself, I know, and I think most of our conference probably would have been open, particularly for more minor charges, not to have cash bail. That being said, why don't we give judges discretion? I mean, they're the ones that are in the front line of this. They know the people that are in front of them. And they can decide what is wrong with considering danger to a community. It seems like a very reasonable, rational thing to have a judge consider when whether you incarcerate someone or put them behind bars. If they're a danger to the community, like they do in New Jersey, by the way, they did bail reform, but they let judges' discretion be there. Why don't we do something like that in New York? I think you'd find bipartisan support for that. So why do we take things? It goes back to the whole criminal justice, you know, these extreme positions like defunding the police, this bail reform, the raise the age, you know, the raise the age you get on, that's where you can't incarcerate, same thing, you can't incarcerate juveniles, which sounds great, sounds terrible, but these poor people they're young, they usually don't have any kind of support system behind them. And they have to put them right back on the streets. And the only way they can get back is the least restrictive means of getting them back into the court. But the problem is, without that support system, which they're missing, they're going and they're recidivizing crime. And it's been tragic. It's not good for them. It's certainly not good for the neighborhoods. It's been, I think, a real tragedy. And we ought to revisit that, not only just bail reform, but also revisit raise the age. Not a great policy.
So, Will Barclay, I guess the question I want to ask you about is the so-called Joint Commission on Public Ethics, otherwise known as J-COPE or J-CHOKE, voted this week to revoke permission that it granted to former Governor Andrew Cuomo to write and publish what became a controversial memoir about how he handled the COVID-19 crisis. He resigned in August, but he was paid $5.1 million. I wrote a book about his father. I didn't get a penny. $5.1 million for the book, but the commission's vote could mean that he has to return at least part of the money. What do you make of that whole thing?
Well, I'm glad they're doing it, but it does show that weakness that was there with J-COPE in the past, particularly when mm-hmm. it came to investigations of the executive branch and the governor. He controlled those appointees, and they apparently followed what his lead, because they could never get any kind of, you know, they couldn't even get a vote on whether the staff should be allowed to opine on whether he could do the book or not. I mean, be involved in numerous organizations. I've never heard where staff could just go out and give an opinion. So now that he's no longer governor, and now you have some appointees in there by Hochul, they apparently had a change of heart and said, this is problematic. So I applaud him for that. But ultimately, I don't think this is the best type of adjudicating body for ethics in New York State, because it's obviously when we saw when the governor has the majority of appointees, he can control what happens.
Well, isn't there something wrong with that? The idea that governors basically appoint the people who are supposed to be looking over their shoulders. And it seems to me that's an issue.
It is, and it's certainly demonstrated, because you see when they no longer had that control, the vote changed. So and it changed substantially. I think it was almost unanimous or one no vote on that. What I think, this is my proposal, what they do, both parties, you have to have equal number of Republicans and Democrats. You can't even do it by branch where you have equal number of governor appointees versus legislator, because, you know, they may be aligned. If it's a Republican, you have all Democrats investigating a Republican. Why not make a body that's equal Republican, Democrat? Both sides want to hold each other accountable, and both sides have motivation to hold each other accountable. That seems to me the only way you're going to get a true, honest, and it can be, you know, as much as you can have independence in politics, independent ethics oversight. And it has to happen.
So when you become, you know, when the Republicans accede to the majority party in New York State, will you have the same line, which is we got to have it 50-50? Will you say, wait a second, the people have spoken and now it's the Republicans' turn to hang it over the Democrats?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know how much of a risk I am of saying this, but I'll make that a promise that once we become the majority party, I will push for a ethics oversight commission or board that would be made up of equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans.
And when do you think, what year do you think that's going to happen in New York City?
I'm not going to hold my breath, but I'm working on it.
Yes, you are.
I'm working on it every day.
Well, you're one of my favorite people in New York State. Will Barclay is a great guy. I just want to assure that to all of you, and is here and answers our calls, and we talk to him every once in a while. It's great to have a Republican such as you with us,
I appreciate that.
Will, and we'll continue to ask, and I hope you continue to say yes. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Take care.